today. Jay, good morning.
Hey, Steve. Thank you for that. How are you doing?
Good. Good. It's just amazing, Jay, to come full circle, to arrive here, whatever, 9 days ago, whatever it was, and feel the tension. And then as the week and as Breeders' Cup approached, trepidation and concerns were dissipating, and then to be literally at the doorstep of, you know, wrapping up a what was seemingly a magical 2 days, to be right back at square one, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, no, you put it very accurately there. That's exactly how the story arc went in the, you know, couple weeks preceding the Breeders' Cup, and then sort of got through Friday. And you could, one of the things that goes on in these situations is that you start watching races differently than you normally do, and not enjoying just the spectacle of it all. And after getting through Friday and Saturday, you know, the first part of Saturday, you were just enjoying racing again and watching great horses perform and seeing some terrific performances, like we saw from Uni and Bricks and Mortar and Matoli. There were just some magnificent performances earlier on the card. And so 15 seconds away from getting through everything, that happened. It was just the difference in the mood at the track yesterday morning from what it probably would have been otherwise was stark. And it's just, you just feel like you can't catch a break lately. It's just been really a struggle this entire year out here.
There are so many components, Jay, to address, and I was immediately on Saturday night in your piece, and then again yesterday in the follow-up, I just kind of ached reading that Ganbat is so devastated by this. And, you know, we were able to talk to him after the awesome again, and the excitement and the anticipation of, you know, paying the supplemental fee to get in the race, and that he couldn't even come out yesterday. And, you know, you've covered him, obviously, under these circumstances. The Mongolians in general have become such a festive and a welcome part of Breeders' Cup celebrations. I mean, one of the best things in recent memory is Mongolian Saturday's win in the Turf Sprint at Keeneland.
That was one of the more enjoyable experiences I've ever had in covering racing, was that whole scene that day. And, you know, on Saturday they were dressed in the traditional outfits for the race as well. And, you know, I saw them walking out from the track or leaving the grandstand Saturday after the race, which is heartbreaking, because here's the jocks that had come back coming through the tunnel, and then obviously a few minutes later the Vino Rosso team, and interspersed with that was them trying to keep their heads held high and but get out of there and get back to the barn and see what to assess the situation, which obviously just you could tell just watching on the racetrack that it looked pretty grim. So it was just a heartbreaking situation. I don't know him well. I've dealt with him, you know, on and off over the years, a lot more recently. And he just seems like a really sweet man, and I just felt terrible for him.
Well, the aftermath, I don't think we have to address some of the questions until things become more apparent. Obviously, Craig Fravel and his new association as a chief executive for the Stronach Group will enter into the equation, and we'll deal with the ramifications long-term here as they unfold. Let's talk about the race, particularly the Classic, as it unfolded. And we had Todd Pletcher to start the show, Jay. And for him, it's really a not a pinnacle, but it's one of the moments in his career that he's aspired to for a long time.
Very much so. You could tell it was a really satisfying win for him to have Vino Rosso win as emphatically as he did, but also to show that he was capable of that performance based on the way he'd been training. He had trained very strongly back in New York before he came out here. He was touting himself on the racetrack all week. My Saturday race preview led with him just because he just so touted himself during the week. And I had actually picked him only second behind Higher Power, but we had to turn our picks in on Monday. But having watched the way he was training, I was like, boy, this horse is gonna run. And he did. I mean, there was nobody beating him on Saturday. And I think for Todd, even though he has two Kentucky Derby wins to his credit, he's a number of Breeders' Cup wins, but like you said, he hadn't won this before, and I think it was a satisfying win, and not just because it was the Breeders' Cup Classic, but I think, Steve, there was a lot of satisfaction of that they had done the right thing with this horse. He was a good 3-year-old. He'd won the Wood, but as the year went on last year, he just showed he was just not quite as good as the top ones of the division, and they gave him a nice long break. And he came back, as you would hope a 4-year-old son of Curlin, as opposed to a 3-year-old son of Curlin, would be, an even better horse. And he had come out here earlier in the year to win the Gold Cup at Santa Anita, which was a really smart dress rehearsal for what they had to do this past week. As Todd said, you know, by having won that race and having shipped out when they did, they had a template to work with. They knew, okay, this works. We know we can ship out the week of the race. We don't need to go in earlier and get a work over the track. We know he likes the track. I think not only was the win satisfying, but I think the culmination of smart management and planning for more than a year paying off in that way was also an aspect of the satisfaction they got out of winning that race.
Talk about the way the race unfolded as you watched, and of course the McKenzie element here, the discussion constantly about his 10 furlong aptitude. Then you know there was some of the subplots, the 3-year-olds that were invading the race. You mentioned Higher Power. He became a major fancy, it seemed, the closer we got to the race. Take us around.
So, obviously, the pace I thought was pretty strong early on. The War of Will went off at a pretty good clip of 23 flat with Mongolian Groom just outside of him, and McKenzie fell into a good spot right there. Bob Baffert wanted him to be in the race. That had been something he wanted done more often with this horse, and he was into the race. He was forwardly placed. I thought he had his chance, and he just turned out to be second best. But look, Vino Rosso ran a monster race, and you know, even though he beat McKenzie by 4.25 lengths, McKenzie was 4.25 in front of Higher Power, and then on down the line. So I thought McKenzie ran his race. He just got beat by a superior horse on the day. And a 1.25 might be, I think he can get a 1.25 in optimum circumstances. He's just better between a mile and 1.125 miles, but he's obviously still effective up to 1.25 miles, and he's one going 7 furlongs like he did in the Malibu. He's a very versatile horse. I do think his wheelhouse is 1 mile to 1.125 miles, but he ran a good race the other day. He was into the race. He was just second best. The other horse was just a much better horse on the day.
Completely agree, and you know, it's not as if when you look at Vino Rosso running a career top 111 buyer, you know, you realize that, you know, that stands right up there in amongst the buyer. I think the buyer par is a 115 for the Classic, but very respectable try by McKenzie. Higher Power checks in third. Some credit to Elate, who didn't look like she was really running and comfortable early, and yet Class Alone gets her up for the last big check.
Right, yeah, she finished up. She finished well to be fourth, but she was still beaten, what, about 11 lengths or so, but she ran on well to be fourth and probably ran a little bit better than, you know, I thought she was capable of. Obviously, she loves 1.25 miles. She just never run 1.25 miles against horses of this caliber, and I thought it was a good performance on her part. You know, the big disappointment was obviously Code of Honor. You could just tell he was just spinning his wheels the whole race, and he just never got on track. And I spoke to Shug McGahey yesterday, and he was pretty upset with the way the track was. He thought it just wasn't firm enough, and that it was not just for his horse, but just for the whole weekend, that it was, there were some horses who really thrived over it, and there were a lot that just that didn't, and that's why you saw a number of dirt races where the field was just really spread out when they got to the wire.
That part of it, and of course, aesthetically, we'll talk about the juvenile races and Friday in a minute, but, you know, horses staggering home a little bit when it came to, you know, when it came to particularly to the juvenile races. But you look at Vino Rosso, considering the times on the 2 days, Jay, 2:02 and change is racehorse time.
No, he ran a, and so was 109 flat for 6 furlongs that Matoli did on that racetrack. And that was another just world-class performance by Matoli, who's just a brilliant racehorse. And that to me was just, that was the race I was most looking forward to, and it didn't disappoint in terms of seeing Chancelot go out there and then Matoli run him down. Yeah, that's the kind of race that on the Santa Anita of 1986, they probably would have run 107.4 or something like that.
Yes.
That's not the Santa Anita we have now.
No, and before we move off the classic, I do want to put in a note that Math Wizard, Safi Joseph, ended up being the highest placing 3-year-old. You mentioned Shug, who is not a guy that pops off. And so, you know, for Shug to go on record, I thought that was notable. Yoshida never got out of second gear.
No, he was well back the whole time and just never, ever got untracked at any point in the race. You know, he and, you know, Seeking the Soul, Code of Honor, they just were never in the race.
Turning backwards, Jay, and let's hit some of the other highlights. You talked about Matoli's win, and I mentioned in my opening what a satisfying effort it was for Steve Asmussen and for the Heilingbrotts, who have been involved in the game for a long time. Steve's oldest continuous client. They almost left the business several years ago, and Steve Asmussen made sure that they stayed in. And to his credit, everlasting credit, to author a moment like they did with Matoli and a season. And, of course, the other big mail race from Saturday, particularly the turf. And so that leaves us to some degree, Matoli, Bricks and Mortar. Talk about the distaff, fold it all in together, Jay, because the Horse of the Year conversation and a lot of other awards on a lot of people's minds after a weekend like this.
Yeah, and I'm going to be addressing that today. I'm writing a piece that'll be online later, and it'll be, I think, in the Thursday print edition of the Racing Form, but it'll be on the website a little bit later today, just looking at now that we've run the Breeders' Cup, what does it look like in terms of all the divisions, and as you just addressed, most specifically, Horse of the Year. So, you know, Bricks and Mortar going into the weekend was on top of the NTRA poll, which is a snapshot of the voters. I think there's about 36 people who vote in that poll every week. I don't, but the reason I don't, I have nothing against the poll. It's just that because of what I have to cover the Eclipse Awards, I have to maintain publicly until the votes are counted, position of neutrality. I just write the news and point out who, and instead of opining on them publicly. But I do think you can make legitimate cases right now for both Bricks and Mortar and Matoli as Horse of the Year. Midnight Bizu had been very highly ranked, and I think still will get some support for Horse of the Year, but the loss in the distaff certainly significantly impacts her chances, especially with the other two winning. But even if she had won and the other two had won, I think running an open company is more significant than running in restricted races. And Midnight Bizu had an unbelievable year and ran another remarkable race on Saturday, being, you know, well out of it and still running on to be second. And she shipped all over the country, so she'll win that division in a landslide, I would think. But let's get back to Horse of the Year. You can make legitimate cases for both Bricks and Mortar, who won all of his races, ran at a number of different racetracks, won five grade ones, and then on Saturday, you know, never having run a mile and a half, won the turf with not an optimum trip. He was not in a great spot for a lot of that race, and he still was able to extricate himself and win the race. But you look at who he ran against all year, and you know, the long distance and middle distance grass horses in this country were, I don't know, okay. But he's undefeated, five grade ones, various distances, absolutely, to me, one of the top two contenders for Horse of the Year. Then you look at Mottoli, six wins, seven starts. His only loss was in the Vanderbilt, where I think it's been well chronicled that the rail was dreadful that day at Saratoga, and that's where he ended up. He was beaten, well beaten that day, by Imperial Hint and Diamond Dukes. But other than that, he won all of his races. Four of them were grade ones, including the Met Mile, which had one of the best fields we've ever seen in that race. And he beat horses of the quality of McKenzie and Thunder Snow, who was coming off his second straight Dubai World Cup win. And then, as we were talking about on Saturday, he beat a world-class sprinter in Chancelot. So, granted, he never went around two turns. All of his races were one turn, and all of the races of Bricks and Mortar were on grass. Bricks and Mortar's undefeated. Mottoli isn't, but Mottoli had probably a pretty legit excuse in his one loss. Five grade ones versus four grade ones, but you look at the level of competition, I'd submit that Mottoli might have been running against and beating superior horses to who Bricks and Mortar ran against. So I think you can make legitimate cases for both horses, and I think either of them would be worthy horses of the year, and both obviously are going to be divisional champions, slam dunks in their respective divisions.
Well, no doubt. There's some other interesting discussions to be had, and certainly the juvenile situation, the male juvenile situation, was thrown into a bit of a panic. We'll get to that. Let's talk about Midnight Bisou and the Distaff. And for another year, the Distaff showed Jay why it belongs on Saturday.
No, I really like what the Breeders' Cup has done in terms of the scheduling of the races now with the 2 days, by putting all the two-year-old races on Friday and moving the Distaff away from being kind of the big race on Friday to part of the big Saturday card. It's just, like you said, it belongs on the big stage, and it was another terrific running the other day. I mean, you and I have both known Nacho Correas for a long time. He's a great guy, and to see him get his first Breeders' Cup win was just a great, great thrill. And he's done a wonderful job with Blue Prize, because she's always been there or thereabouts, but she's stepped up and won the Spinster twice at Keeneland. But you wonder going into this race if she was going to be as good out here as she's been at Keeneland, which she obviously loves. And you know, she ran a terrific race. She was farther back than Midnight Bisou early, and got first run on her and won the race by a length and a half. So it was a pretty impressive performance by her. I'm sure. I don't know that it's enough for her to usurp Midnight Bisou as the champion of the division. I think the overall body of work of Midnight Bisou is certainly wins out there, but Blue Prize will be a worthy runner up. I would imagine, you know, second place finisher in that category, Eclipse Award time.
Well, and I, until we just started talking about it, I really hadn't thought about whether there would be contention to be discussed. But boy, it is it's kind of, you look at the pages. Yeah, it's hard to let this race supersede everything else that that Bisou did. And, you know, it's not as if, you know, it's not as if she didn't put in a run and was a no-show by any means. Really just a special job. In a lot of ways, Blue Prize felt like a companion performance, Jay, to Vino Rosso's, because I kind of thought maybe she was coming in and that Spinster was going to have been her distaff for the second year in a row. But she looked a picture leading into Saturday the same way Vino Rosso did.
Right. No, and she ran a terrific race on Saturday, and like I said, you know, she's really thrilled for Nacho Correas. When I knew him when he was out here as an assistant to Bill Curran. Quite a ways back, but
how about that?
Nice to see him.
How about that?
Nice to see him. Nice to see him get to this point.
That predates my getting to know him by a long way. Nice to get a Bill Curran mention too on the Breeders' Cup Rap Show. I think we should also acknowledge Joe Bravo getting his first Breeders' Cup win.
Yeah, certainly a long time coming for him, and finally got that elusive first win. So nice, a nice thing for him to finally get on his resume, that's for sure.
Back up to the filly and the mare in the mile, Jay. And, you know, when we were kind of putting fields together a month ago, give or take, the original storyline was going to be Uni and Got Stormy. And then people got all, you know, interested in the other horses that were coming in. And then there it was in the stretch, and it became very obvious, oh, it's going to be Got Stormy and Uni.
Yeah, they're both top-class mares, and they should decide this division, I would think, in terms of the Eclipse Awards. Sister Charlie will certainly get some support too, but they traded punches this year in races against males in the four-star Dave, and then this race on Saturday. And I just think the turn of foot that Uni has is just electrifying. She is so much fun to watch. I remember seeing her last year when she came out to Del Mar for the Matriarch, and the run she put in that day was just, you were amazed at how fast she turned on the jets coming down the stretch. And we saw that same turn of foot on Saturday. And I'm just a big fan of her. I really like her. I only picked her second. I gambled. I liked Haga Man in that race. And I was not anticipating El Tormenta tormenting him the way he did. But I don't know that it was going to matter the way Uni and Got Stormy both performed, but Uni was best on the day, and I think the Eclipse Award comes down to she and Got Stormy in that division, I would think.
You mentioned the pace, and the storyline going in was that there wasn't necessarily a lot of early lick, and this is probably a good spot, Jay, to acknowledge what a terrific job Joel Rosario did, because Uni early seemed like she was being used for position, and then just as quickly Joel switched off because he realized there was a pace materializing that we really had not anticipated, and then she, you know, was in contact with the field in a good position to put in her run. And Rosario, who everybody, I think, was anticipating, was in position to have a big Breeders' Cup and pretty much did. And that was one of the highlights.
Definitely so. No, he had a terrific weekend, and that was one of the highlights. I don't know where all that speed came from El Tormenta. I know he'd had it earlier in his career, but it just seemed like more recently he had enjoyed stalking trips, and I was shocked that he was used the way he did, because I don't know what he had, no chance the way he was ridden to go and engage Haga Man like that. It was just, they were both going to pay the price when he could have, I mean, they were well in front of the rest of the field. He could have sat, you know, just off and maybe given himself a chance, but not the way it played out.
Well, one of the aspects of the cup in general was the less than sterling showing of the international contingent. There were certainly isolated successes, including the Korean, which we'll get to. But Circus Maximus, a disappointment, as I guess the near, a little under 4-1, and never really challenged. We should note Chad Brown breathing life back into Without Parole.
Yeah, no, Without Parole ran a terrific race, and he got bet like he was live. I mean, he on his form just didn't look to me like he was good enough, but he got bet and he ran. He finished third. He was only a nose in front of. I didn't think Circus Maximus ran that bad, Steve. He finished fourth.
Right, okay.
I mean, he was only a nose behind Without Parole. It wasn't like he was ever in the race. I just thought that the reason I was against Circus Maximus is I wasn't sure he was going to like the ground as firm as he was going to get on Saturday. And that, to me, when you're handicapping these Europeans who come over, I think you really need to go to school on the difference between the courses they're going to run on, not only when they come from there to here in terms of what they were running on, you know, in Europe as opposed to here, but the different tracks in the U.S. I mean, obviously, the ground that you get at Keeneland next year is going to be different from the ground that you got at Santa Anita. And those are, I think, important aspects when handicapping these horses. I mean, you look at Iridesa, I mean, she obviously just really thrived on top of ground like she got on Saturday and won a hard-fought race over Basilica in the Sicilian Mare Turf.
Yeah, and that's where I was going to go next, because it was Joseph O'Brien who salvaged the weekend for the Euro tinged and Iridesa and getting up to Basilica. And I thought Basilica looked like she was trying to battle back, could not have been more game, and ran just a dynamite race for Dan Ward and the partnership group, including Janet Hollendorfer, and Sister Charlie, they can't complain that there wasn't a pace setter, because here was Mirth that basically did what Thais was going to do.
Right. No, she got the pace to run at. She just didn't accelerate like she has. And look, I mean, her previous race against Mississippi was a good race, but it wasn't as brilliant as we've seen. And, you know, Mississippi beat one horse the other day. So maybe, as it turns out, the prep was not didn't quite measure up to what some of these other horses were coming out. I mean, look at the form of the First Lady with Uni and Basilica. You know how they ran coming out of that race, as opposed to how the horses coming out of Sister Charlie's last win did. That was a pretty significant difference in terms of the quality of those. Of those races. So, you know, the First Lady was definitely a better race than the Flower Bowl, as it turned out. I thought Basilica, like you said, she ran a game race, but that's her. She's never, ever mailed it in. She fires every time, and she just got beat by a horse who was slightly better. But you're right, she was fighting back. I mean, she was not going away without a fight.
Yeah, and she didn't necessarily approach this the way we're accustomed with her, coming from a little further back. She was on the pace and part of it, and so she showed, a kind of a different dimension, and just showed, what a game and tough mare she is, and that's what everybody's come to expect. We talked endlessly, it seemed, when Omaha Beach burst back on the scene, the thrilling performance in the sprint championship, which then created a dialogue that was closely followed. Richard Mandela settling on the dirt mile, and for the early part of the running, it didn't look like Omaha Beach was going to be anywhere, and then he kicked into gear and came running. It was a little too late, but nothing wrong with that effort from him. Spun to Run is one of the best three-year-olds in the country, and I think everybody now knows it.
Yes, and as Dick Girardi, who does the figs for Parks for the Buyer team, said after the race to me, figs don't lie. That horse had a big number coming into the race. It's one of the reasons Dick Girardi ended up finishing third in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. He loved this horse and made a pretty sizable wager on him at 9-1, and he led from start to finish. The weird thing to me, Steve, about the way this race unfolded was I don't know what the connections of Colfront were trying to accomplish. I mean, he needs to be into the race, and he was anything but. He was fifth into the first turn. Omaha Beach, you would have thought, would have been closer. Mike Smith said that he kind of lost his hind end leaving the gate. He said he kind of got stale standing in there waiting for some of the notorious bad actors in the gate to load. They loaded Giant Expectations and most notably Improbable, even though they were post 1 and 2. Improbable was the last horse to go into the gate because he's a bad gate horse. And Omaha Beach was standing there a long time, and he just didn't get out, and he lost position early. But, you know, look, Spun to Run beat him by 2 3/4 lengths. So he ran those horses off their feet. And Omaha Beach was just second best. It would have been nice to see him into the race earlier. Mandela said that he thought maybe coming off that hard race in the sprint, he was a little bit dull the first part of the race, that maybe bounced just a little bit, and he didn't have quite the same acceleration getting out of there as you normally would have, but look, Spun to Run beat him. And then you were alluding a few minutes ago to the Korean horse, Blue Chipper, like we were talking about on your show last week. I was dismissive of this horse just when he first came in because you're like, well, how good could this horse be? But you watched him train last week, and you're like, this is a real horse. He had trained brilliantly all week long. You know, he's got a top pedigree. He's a Kentucky bred. He's by Tisnow. But he trained like he was going to run, and he did. He might have been second if they didn't try and win the race. They had to go after Spun to Run on the turn. That's what you try and do. And he kind of emptied out, and Omaha Beach caught him. But if he's ridden for second, he might be second. But you can't do that in a race like this. You got to take your shot. And he was. I thought he ran a really, really strong race.
Yeah, very much. And the Korean, there were quite a few of the Asian media on hand for the two Japanese runners on the weekend and for Blue Chipper and Kim Young Kwan. Quite nice. And we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what they do with him going forward. 3-year-olds, 1-2, Improbable fifth, the Mr. Money kind of chased and backed up. So the Dirt Mile is always a bit of a it's always a bit of an odd duck coming in and going out. Let's talk about the sprint on the turf. We had Peter Miller. And I hope everybody's learned the lesson here. When Miller points these horses and gives them the time off to get them ready for these spots, they mostly fire. And Peter Miller had a tremendous weekend in with almost all of his starters, and he comes up with another turf sprint exacta, second in 3 years.
Right. No, he ran it. You're right. He had a big weekend. He won the Twilight Derby at Boxcars. Billy Batts ran second in the Juvenile Turf on Friday, and then this race 1-2 with Belvoir Bay and Ohm, both of whom came into the race, as you pointed out, fresh, and they fired fresh, and he knows how to work it with these turf sprinters, how to keep them going. You know, Stormy Liberal, who had won the two prior Breeders' Cup sprints for Miller, you could just tell this year he just wasn't quite the same horse, and he again ran. He's just not the same horse anymore. He's the kind of horse who used to be in the fight, and he'd always win those close photos, and now he's just not quite that good anymore. But the other two, coming in fresh and training well, both fired and beat a horse I thought was pretty live in this race, Sheki Shabazz, who ran a good race to be third and just got nosed out by Ohm for second.
Well, and of course, Pure Sensation, Christophe Clément will have to wait another year to try to break that Breeders' Cup duck. I actually ended up inadvertently watching the race with Mrs. Generazio, Jay, and she asked me to give her the call, and I didn't want to say, gates are open, you lose, because that's what happened. I said, oh no, Pat. I said, he blew the break, and from there it was almost hopeless.
Yeah, no, just being drawn down inside there, if you don't get out, you're in big trouble. I mean, you know, the exacta was 12-11 in terms of where they were drawn. So obviously being out there where the Smarty McGee likes to say where the air is fresh and clean was of benefit to Belvoir Bay and Ohm.
Eddie Haskell had a terrible trip for those that haven't watched the replays yet.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nature of these races. If you don't get position early, you can be in dire trouble, and that's what happened with him. He just, it just all went wrong for him. And he's a five furlong specialist, but the race just did not unfold to his advantage at all.
Well, Saturday's opener for the Breeders' Cup very well could have not unfolded for Covfefe having to deal with the inside post, and here was Rosario's other masterful ride.
No, it's a terrific ride to get her out, but then let the other horses clear, Danuska's My Girl and Heaven Has My Nikki, and then just get into a perfect stalking position and go on and beat Bellafina, who really fired. Covfefe won by 3/4 of a length, and Bellafina was nearly 8 clear of the rest of the field. I didn't really understand what was going on with Selcourt. She's very fast, and I'm not sure why she wasn't into the race early on. And I told Simon Callahan yesterday, I said, I think Brad Cox owes you a nice Christmas present or at least a really nice bottle of bourbon, considering what happened in the Juvenile Fillies on Friday, with British Idiom beating Dona Veloce, and then comes back the next day, and Cox and Callahan 1-2 in this race.
Oh, that's a good point. I hadn't made that connection. Good point. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Looking up and down this group, Come Dancing, I'm sure Carlos Martin disappointed. She never really reached contention, and you could tell the race was over for her early.
Right. She was never... She was never into the race. Just a poor performance on her part. One of the, number of horses who just didn't fire out here. She must not have liked the surface, but because she just was never into the race at all.
Jay, before we talk about Friday, I'm gonna reiterate what I talked about with Peter Miller and earlier in the show. The prequel to Breeders' Cup Saturday was the Twilight Derby, and not only did we see an emergent 3-year-old in Mo Forza, one of the most touching things I've seen in a winner's circle, Jay, in many, many years, and the love for Barry Abrams, the outpouring, was so sweet and really special, and I was glad to be there just for that. I made the weekend.
So Barry's the co-owner of Mo Forza, and has had some pretty serious health problems in recent years, and it was just great to see him there and to see him win the race. And as you mentioned, he's just a really well-liked person, and considering what he's gone through, that just added a special level of meaning for it. So it was just a great thing for him, and to see that scene down there was pretty neat.
Jay, talk about Friday, and of course, working backwards from the juvenile, Dennis's moment goes to his knees, and you just one of those jarring moments, given the favoritism, given the focus on him going into the race.
Right, I mean, the race was over for him as soon as the gate opened. I don't know if there's any photos online of what he looked like when the race was over. I couldn't believe how much material he and Irad Ortiz were covered in when he came back to be unsaddled. I'm going to try and see if I can find, there were so many photographers, I'm sure somebody got a shot of him, but it was unbelievable how much material was on him. It just showed what kind of a track they were trying to get over on Friday. So he was eliminated, and as we talked on your show last week, I had been underwhelmed by the way Eight Rings had trained in his most recent workout, so I was trying to beat him. So, my long shot in the race that I thought had a big chance was Shoplifted, and he managed to finish 7th out of 8. So the race was just completely chaotic. Storm the Court, who it was kind of ironic, he was the horse that Eight Rings wiped out in the Del Mar Futurity when Eight Rings took his left-hand turn and not only eliminated Storm the Court, but knocked Flavian Pratt out of the saddle that day. And here was Storm the Court and Pratt coming back and gaining a big measure of revenge by winning this race. And I thought Anudora ran an unbelievable race, second time out for Blaine Wright and Juan Hernandez. I thought he was winning when they turned into the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And he ran Storm the Court all the way to the wire. He just was second best.
28-1 for Anudora and 46-1 for Storm the Court. And of course, a son of Court Vision. whose big moment was winning the Breeders' Cup Mile for Dale Romans. So there was all kinds of ironies involved, and Max Field, you got to think. I hadn't even thought about this with Brendan Walsh, Jay, that, Brendan Walsh has got to feel like, the opportunity slipped through. And not only did the dirt opportunity slip through, but, of course, on Saturday morning out went his chances, even in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf as well. So, there was a lot of that. I haven't even discussed the horses that were scratched on Saturday morning for various reasons, Imperial Hint and who else? Bolo and
Fleeting.
Am I forgetting? Fleeting.
Those horses were Saturday. Vitology was Friday.
Right. I'm talking in general, the combination of the 2 days. You mentioned the second time start for A No Door. How about the second time start for Donna Veloce, who was, so game, and also looked like she was winning late in the late stages.
Yeah, I thought that was just, it was interesting. Flavian Pratt didn't win any races all weekend, but I thought he gave some of his horses tremendous rides. He had a number of second and third place finishes the whole week, but this might have been the best one because drawn inside and coming off a big sprint win and her lone start, going two turns, you would have just thought she's going to be part of the pace, and it's one of the reasons I was against her. And he got her to settle, I thought, in a good spot, stalking trip, made the move to the lead, and just got worn down late by British Idiom, who had one more start than her coming into the race, and significantly that one more start around two turns off her win in the Alcibiades. And that was the difference, the experience in terms of racing and two turns. British Idiom got up and beat her by a neck, but you're right. Donna Veloce just ran a terrific race for off the one sprint to run like that second time out in a championship race and beat Bast and Perfect Alibi and Wicked Whisper and on down the line. It was a really, really strong performance on her part.
The three turf races, some thoughts. Here was a circumstance for Graham Motion. We're going to talk to Graham in a little bit. And he sends out a daughter of a Breeders' Cup winner, out of a daughter, and out of a Breeders' Cup winner, shared account, delivers sharing, and she comes through. I thought got a great ride from Manny Franco, and for Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners and Anthony Beck, a big win.
Yeah, no, nice win for her, and a really good story there with Graham Motion because he trained shared account. The Dam of Sharing, and won the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf in 2010 with shared account, and then trains her daughter to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf 9 years later. So that's just a terrific story, and I would imagine that the main reason that Sharing ended up with Graham Motion is because he had trained the Dam. The Eclipse people, they use a number of trainers, and I would think that was among the reasons why Graham Motion was who they have horses with, but specifically why he was chosen for this filly, and it obviously paid off. I thought the horrible trip of the weekend award goes to Albigna in this race. She, if you haven't had a chance to watch the replay of this, my God, she got shuffled back to last with a quarter mile left, and she was absolutely flying down the lane, and she deserved a better fate than she had, that's for sure. She'd be one to, I think, watch going forward. I'm sure she'll go back to Europe, but I would put her on my short list of Thousand Guineas or Oaks-type fillies to watch next year because she was, oh, man, that was bad luck writ large.
Well, and Daya had a couple of traffic issues to deal with too. I mean, if she had gotten sprung a little bit earlier, she may have gotten at least closer to Sharing. She menaced, as it were. I went into the Friday, the turf race is kind of feeling like Chad Brown would win one or the other, and it was Structor that ends up the winner of the boys' race. That's Chad's first. He actually, on the weekend, three wins, but he got his first win in the turf ever, and he got his first win in the juvenile boys' turf.
Right, so Structor winning that race, made a nice late run under Jose Ortiz to beat Billy Bass, who we were talking about earlier, was one of the Peter Millers who just who fired big over the weekend. Decorated Invader in Arizona had pretty tough wide trips to overcome, and I thought ran on well for fourth and fifth. They could have been much closer with better trips, and Structor just was able to hug the rail and get through and come on and prevail under Jose Ortiz, and it's a good year for the horse. He was 3 for 3, and he's going to be given a chance in the early part of his three-year-old year next year to see if he can run on the dirt, because Chad was saying after the race that the whole reason he started him on the grass is because he just thinks he's a two-turn horse, and he didn't want to sprint him first time out. He wanted to, and so to run him long, it just made sense for him to go on the grass, and once he won, it was like, well, we're not going to deviate from this right now, but, you know, being by a Belmont Stakes winner, you got him at least give him a chance to show that he can run on dirt, and he'll get that chance the early part of next year, and you know that if it turns out he doesn't like it, he's got a pretty good fallback position.
Well, and Peter Miller said he also is going to try some dirt action with Billy Bats.
Mm-hmm.
Gets us to the opener on Friday, and Wesley Ward. You kind of felt secure, I think, starting your pick five, just using the two Wesleys, Kimeri and Four Wheel Drive.
Yeah, no, I was glad Four Wheel Drive won, because then I knew at least I wouldn't blank for the whole weekend. that's always good to get one out of the way, but. No, he won like you're supposed to in a turf sprint. He just broke like a shot, and they couldn't catch him. And it kind of set the tone for the weekend for Irad Ortiz, who just had a great weekend. And, you know, his brother was second, and Manny Franco was third. And all three of them had excellent weekends in at the Breeders' Cup out here. But Four-Wheel Drive, he was best. And he was just the fastest horse, and nobody was catching him.
Jay, 14 winners, some interesting runners up and so forth behind, as always, you know, a lot to absorb. Some final thoughts about the weekend.
I think we kind of covered it all.
Yeah, no, all right.
I don't know what else there is to say. It was a great weekend of racing until the last 15 seconds. So it was a very, very enjoyable performances, and seeing world class racing, and seeing the way, Bricks and Mortar and Vino Rosso and Mattoli, and just watching them all. It's just I love the Breeders' Cup. It's just a great event, and look forward to seeing it again next year when the circus moves to Keeneland. In the meantime, the circus out here on our circuit moves to Del Mar, which opens Friday for the fall meet. So that's a home game, and looking forward to that.
Absolutely. Jay, I can't thank you enough. And, of course, the whole team, DRF, America's Turf Authority since?
Marty McGee was first going to the races.
Jay, thanks so much.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good trip home.
Thank you. DRF Privman, everybody. We could actually stay here, Deja. The music's good, but we can actually stay here because